Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is episode number 18 of the EBMP. Our guest is Johnny Weaver, the head honcho of Click Gaming. Johnny is a veteran in the esports industry. You could say he's played every role one can imagine in esports. Early in his career, he was a professional Halo player, and having crafted his skills playing Halo, he graduated from being a player to being a tournament organizer. He's elevated Click Gaming to be a household name in both offline and online amateur esports tournaments. In addition, the impact he's made on both grassroots and professional esports should not go without mention. In this episode, learn more about how Johnny Weaver and Click Gaming are building the future of esports. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox. Welcome back to the Esports Business Network podcast. Our guest for this evening is Johnny Weaver of Click Gaming. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Thanks, man. How you been, brother? You been good?
I'm doing well, I guess. I'm making it happen here.
Right.
Esports has been kind of crazy, right? I mean, especially with COVID. What's going on with the Smash scene
Dude.
Even the Smash scene, the netcode and stuff, that's big talk right now.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that. Especially people making people cease and desist. It's like,
that's rough. Yeah. And I had a guest on the show earlier who's a big part of the Smash community, Nick DiRaggio, and he was inviting folks on to play Slippy with him. And the reason why they shut it down was because, you know, Slippy was going to host this big tournament, the Big House 10, and I guess there was copyright and all this stuff. But we'll get into that for sure later on in the show. But let's start off with the question I generally ask guests is, how did you get into gaming? How did you get into esports? What was it like when you were a kid?
Man, growing up, you know, I was born in 85, bro. So I started, of course, on Mario and stuff like that. My first event was 1992 at Donkey Kong Country. So you can get the most bananas in 5 minutes at Blockbuster Video. So I did that. I won it. And then I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then, of course, Mario Kart came out. And then GoldenEye came out. And as those transitioned on the 64, now we're getting into Halo, Call of Duty, CSGO, all those things. And so I tried Halo 1. I got my ass kicked and I liked it. I wanted more. And so I kept grinding. And then finally, 2004 in Las Vegas at the Halo 2 Open Invitational, I won it. And then this is where we're at now, 1,700 plus events later.
Hell yeah. I mean, your story is one I think that a lot of people can get a lot of value from. And that's why I wanted to invite you on the show. And the first time I guess I got introduced to you was when you posted in our Facebook group, you know, showcasing who you are and whatnot. And I thought, well, that's someone that that's got a long, extensive resume in the space. I definitely have not been around that long.
Right.
You know, what was it like, you know, in those early stages? Like, what was the community like?
Now? So they were great. So back in the day, let's say for Halo, for instance, if you did not buy your pass within literally 3 hours, they'd be sold out. So 256 teams would be battling over 10 grand, 20 grand, etc. Now, from how that transitioned to where we're at now, now you're lucky enough to get maybe 40 to 60 teams compared to the 256 we used to get. And of course, now everybody is doing online like game battles and stuff for, you know, placement in brackets. Well, back in the day, you and your teammates would have to play free for all. And how you guys did is how you would stack up in the bracket play. So therefore, you know, it's not, well, I grinded online. I'm physically here trying to show off how great I am. And it has transitioned in a lot of good and bad ways, because the community back in the day, they were all having fun. Now it is more of an ego area because of how digital media is. You know, you have to have an Instagram or Twitter to be famous. Back then, you just played, you know, you either kicked ass or got your ass kicked. You know, there's no in between. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. What did it take? You know, what did it take to get involved in a tournament early on? Because obviously now it's, you know, highly broadcasted on Twitch and whatnot. But if you wanted to get involved with a Halo tournament, what were you thinking? Like, what was your mindset in order to make that happen?
So basically, back in the day, you would have to, like I said, first of all, just grind online with your friends. That's all you could do, Xbox Live, or you can have little LAN parties. But to find tournaments, you would honestly have to search the interwebs, Google. But like, you know, you would type and say Halo 2, and then Dallas would pop up, or you Halo 2 Meadowlands. So you'd have to literally type online, figure out where these events are going on. And of course, we both know back in the day, Google isn't what it used to be now. You know, it was hard roughing that. Yeah. So you had to literally grind and find out. And so there was a bunch of, you know, fly-by-night grassroots programs. And there was the big boy dance, you know, Sundance Giovanni from MLG. He started that stuff, you know, way back when. And they used to be 6 cities, then 12 cities, and then they were international. And then, of course, you see where it's at now, how we have DreamHack, ESL, all those things. So to literally find what you wanted, you just had to either know somebody that was already on it, or you had to Google and then dig through the forums of, you know, people just posting Halo 2 fan pages compared to actually the big boy MLG events, because MLG was a thing back in the day, and so was game battles. And game battles is where you would go and buy your tickets and stuff to go to an event.
Oh, game battles. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for a little bit of context for our listeners here, Johnny's out of Oklahoma and been doing it from out of there for quite some time.
Took him long.
You know, wild how much experience you have, and not in the way of like you talk about experience in other industries. Like, it was hard to get experience.
It was
like, it wasn't easy to get experience. So that's something like, you know, veterans like you and deserve like your praise for having put in so much, you know, time and effort into it and really making it what it is today. But what's the scene like in Oklahoma now?
So it is expanding slowly. It's not like California. It's not like Texas, et cetera. It is expanding. Grassroots is going strong. The great thing too now is that a bunch of high schools and colleges are picking up, you know, esports teams, building esports arenas. And then there's also some other companies that are invested, like, for instance, Hideaway Pizza is a big thing out here. And so there's owners of that are building or buying a room to then build a, I wouldn't say cyber cafe, but have, you know, casual esports things where teams can come and practice, but also do esports tournaments. And so they can build all the stuff for like the cyber cafe area. But when it comes to tournaments, they got to talk to guys like me to help get the production, the rules, the correct format of attracting those outside things. Cause anybody can say, hey, here's $5,000. But if you're doing pub stomp rules, no one's going to come that wants to get sweaty, you know? So it is expanding. But yeah, back in the day, I mean, you would have to either do it yourself. Like, me and the guys would literally get probably 24 to 32, you know, old school boob tube TVs. We'd get the old school Xboxes, LAN it up, and we would throw down $200, $300. You know, it was like literally $5 a person to get in compared to the, you know, $300 team pass now. And now you're playing for $50,000. But yeah, Oklahoma, if it's not as strong as the other big states, but it is coming up there. We're always behind the belt, as we say a little bit, but practice makes perfect grind. I mean, for now, like for instance, with us, I work with 16 colleges. I work with 52 high schools, and I work with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I work with a couple of the hospitals and stuff out here too, for like Extra Life Foundation and whatnot. So it's a struggle bus, but it's a hustle bus at the same time, man.
Yeah. And so let's talk about that a little bit more. So Click Gaming, what's the major initiative? What are y'all looking to accomplish?
So my main thing is I always want to give back to the community, no matter how big or small you are, because there's a lot of great talent that can't afford to go to California. They can't afford to go to Washington, et cetera, to play in these events. So now if you're dumbing it down to where we're at, it helps out the amateur guys as a practice field in a way. Yes, you're still competing for money. Yes, you're still doing big boy rules, but now you don't have to get big boy sweaty until you are ready for it. So I like to treat it as, let's say you're playing sports from high school to college to pro. I would consider ourselves a high school / college level. And then from there, they can transition and grow with us. And that's the thing too, is that, you know, we work with so many sponsors, and of course, with me being in the pro scene, I'm able to say, hey, this is what's coming up. If you guys want to practice for it, I can get scrims with some of the pro guys to play with you if you want to have a good matchup, so you'll know what you're up against. And so I just use it as a training ground, just to let anybody have fun and show off how great you might be, no matter how little or big you may be in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I want to ask you about two terminologies and see like where you first heard these two things. But what's like the major difference between a grassroots team and an amateur team?
So grassroots basically just means that, you know, you're a home star hero. For instance, you know, I live in a small town of 800 people. And so, I mean, that's grassroots compared to, you know, your major cities. It's a lot of basically like, say if it's me, you and a couple of our buddies just having fun. You know, we're just we're just playing online pubs. You're like, oh, there's a tournament. Let's have fun. And AM team, they're the guys that grind out 8 to 10 hours a day, just sweat, because they want to get to that pro caliber. So it's basically a thing from me and the friends just drinking, having some beers. And now it's me and the guys actually going to a beer, you know, a beer fest competition to see who could drink the most. So there's just those two gray areas to look at.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the kind of conversion from being an amateur team to a pro team? I know you probably have more experience in Halo, but what's it like?
It's basically, so you have to focus, and no matter what happens, think of it as playing a real life sport. Yes, you're going to get your ass kicked, but are you going to just quit the team immediately, or are you going to keep grinding? And so an AM team, they have to treat it as it's a 9-to-5 job. That's how you're going to get sponsors. That's how you're going to get noticed. You can't just play in a tournament and get fourth place, be like, oh, we didn't get first, I'm out. I see that a lot. I see a lot of kids think they're great. They'll play great, but then they get beat by a better team. And then they're like, oh, I'm not going to do this again. You practice. You get your ass kicked and you practice daily. And so from going to an AM to a pro, it's literally going and playing online events. It's going and playing, you know, GBs, game battles and stuff like that. And then it's going to some major events that you can and keep placing. You're not going to get first. Even the greats lose. But if you want to get that caliber thing, you have to literally put in 40 to 60 hours a week and continue to do it and build your team as well as your skills. Because you might be the greatest player, but if you're an asshole, no one's going to want to pick you up, man.
Yeah. Yeah, the personality side, which goes into like, how does someone build an organization online? How do they, you know, get themselves a public facing, you know, presence like you've done with Click Gaming?
I mean, honestly, there's multiple ways. So let's say if you want to be a player, you grind it out. You can use social media to your advantage. So let's say you play in a 10K Call of Duty event or whatever, right? Let's say you place top 16. You didn't get first, but now you're showing people, hey, I took on Optic Gaming, or hey, I took on FaZe, or a known tournament people that are inside the league, even though if you played them online. So then you can show those screenshots and people like, oh, this team's pretty stacked. They're coming along great. If you want to be an individual to run events, you just start. I mean, yes, don't get me wrong, you want to get paid to put on a tournament, but sometimes you got to spend the money to make the money by doing the free to enter tournaments. It doesn't have to be $1,000. It doesn't have to be $500. You can do, like, for instance, we just had a Smash one tonight. It was $10 1v1, and we had over 62 players. And it's still going on right now on the Discord on my side because my guys are handling it. And they're having fun. And that's what our thing is we enjoy engaging with no matter who's around us. And that's what it should be. If you're a streamer, if you're a player, if you're an admin like I am, always have fun. Never treat it like you're stuck behind a cubicle somewhere and you hate your life, but you have to make the money, you know, type thing.
Yeah. So for somebody who's just like getting into the industry and looking for an opportunity, like what would you advise they do if they're looking at something like maybe what you're doing with tournament admin work? What would be the first opportunity they should take advantage of?
Well, there is a website which is called hitmarkerjobs.com that is all esports from internship up to having, you know, levels of experience like I am. That can land anything from remote, so you have to physically be there in that state. Another thing you can do is also reach out to possibly tournaments that you see online, like on Battlefy or on Smash, and just reach out to the admins and say, hey, I'd like to run tournaments. Can I maybe work with you guys to learn some things? And either they'll be nice or they'll be like, no, I'm not, you're going to step on my toes. Like, for instance, we have interns in ours where we're teaching them how to do production. We're teaching them how to do casting. We're teaching them how to run brackets. And then that's whether they want to make esports their job or it's, you know, stacks on the resume or create their own thing. It's just, you just have to try it. And if you get, you know, if you get your head wrapped around something that's confused, you just reach out to, like I said, somebody like me, or, you know, look online like Twitter or something and just say, hey, can you help me with something? And you might get a nice person. You might not. It just depends. But you just have to try.
Yeah, I think, yeah, for someone in that place, like for me, my bright light, you know, light bulb moment was seeing it first, you know, feeling the part of the community, going in and being active out there. And that was my bright light moment where I was like, oh, I have a skill. I can do video. Let me see if they need video, you know, and asking like, where can I get, you know, get in where I fit in? Where's the right place? And then just taking that first experience and showcasing it and getting another one off of the experience that you start building. I think a lot right now people are faced with the anxiety or maybe the fear of taking that first step. What do you suggest to those guys? What should they think about?
I mean, honestly, it's like going on a date. It's like you want to kiss the girl so yep. bad, but you don't want to screw it up. You just got to go for it. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. But that's the thing too, is like, all right, let's say you go in for that kiss and she's like, oh, I'm not ready. You don't pressure. You're like, all right, that's cool. No big deal. My bad. You know, and then you keep going at it till you earn it, I guess you could say. And so in this mm-hmm. aspect is, all right, let's say you do your first tournament and it kind of craps mm-hmm. the bed. Well, it's going to happen. I mean, there's been big events where like, internet went down at DreamHack. I mean, you just gotta go with the punches, man. But mm-hmm. just never give up, especially if you enjoyed it. You're gonna get flustered just like any other job. You're gonna get mad about something. Some things aren't gonna go right. But it's when you just brush it off, like, all right, hey, we learned what happened. Let's keep grinding and try to prevent such things from happening again. You know? And it's like you had mentioned, you know, yeah. For instance, we had a meeting with the Marines last night. We were at dinner and it is a new guy who's on marketing. He's like, I love esports so much. He's like, my other passion is photography. And I was like, why don't you come take some photos at our events? He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, dude, come take photos. And he's like, oh shit. Okay. You know, he's so happy. And he wouldn't have that unless he would have spoke up. And then like, so for instance, me, I was like, yeah, come on out. And so it takes initiative of someone starting something. And then basically from there, it transitions into something more.
Absolutely. And so I was just thinking right then, I was like, if you're in a small rural area, you know, like both of us come from, obviously I'm a little bit closer to the Austin area and I'm able to travel there, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of people who are out there in other countries, rural areas, and other countries, rural areas here in the US, and they don't know whether they don't know if there's an opportunity for them to go be a part of a team, or if they should just try to make something on their own. What should, you know, how should they, you know, weigh their options, weigh their, you know, balance it and make it happen as best as they can?
Honestly, I would see that starts with the grassroots parts. So see what's kind mm-hmm. of in your area, see who's doing what. You could reach out to them and, like you said, try to work with them, or you could try to start your own little thing as a little guy trying to get big. If you do that, that's fine, but don't expect to be, you know, having 5,000 followers in 2 days. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to earn people's trust. You're going to have to get your name out there. And that just means hustling. Because I mean, I've seen companies on these Facebook groups I'm in, they're like, oh, you know, this tournament here, and they'll charge like $5, but they'll say like prize is 500 and they won't get anybody to sign up. I'm just like, it's not because you're doing it wrong. It's because either A, you may not have their professional rules, or B, they don't know you. And so, you know, they don't want to pay someone on PayPal or Cash App because they don't trust you. They just don't know you. And so you just have to earn people's trust. You have to grind out. And then from how everything turns out, that's how you start getting sponsors. That's how you start getting noticed. Like you said, you have to also stream stuff, because pen and paper events are great, but if someone can't watch it or see any tracks of it, then who's going to give a damn about it? You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of technical aspect and infrastructure that goes into the tournament organization side, that, you know, when you talk to other people who do marketing or advertising in the space, often, you know, everybody plays their part. You know, everybody has their, you know, tool bag that they have to bring to the dance, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think the first thing is figuring out what your tool is, whatever your skill is, what can you do and add value? You talked about the guy who was part of the marketing team for the Marines. Is like, photography, you know, is a great asset to bring into the table, especially right now. But right. I'm sure back in the day when, you know, before Instagram and Halo, it was pretty hard to market tournaments. Nowadays, what do you do to market a tournament?
So one of the easiest things to do, let's say you can't get on social media, you can't get on Facebook or whatever, go to your local GameStop. If you have gear, or let's say if they have Xboxes in the game, but you have monitors, you can say, hey, I want to team up with you guys. Let's do a midnight release. And then from there, people are like, oh, you host tournaments? And so you network, you always network. And so let's say now you're not doing tournaments, but you want to get into it. let's say you want to make a trip and you want to go to like E3 or something, that's a great networking area. So you just try to find what's around you that involves esports, and then you just ask. And the worst answer you'll ever get from finding a team to finding a sponsor to finding a job is no. And then you're like, all right, well, I'll try again later on whenever I get my crap in gear, as we call it, you know?
Yeah. And so you mentioned GameStop there. What's it like working with, big box retailers, and what's the process of getting like approved to get to do sort of tournaments like that?
So honestly, when it comes to like, say, GameStop, Walmart, Best Buy, just walk up and find like their manager and just be like, hey, I know you guys have a lot of this. Would you like to get, because if you can sell them foot traffic, then they're going to help market it with you. So if you're like, hey, I've got this gear, let's do a midnight tournament, they're thinking in their head, well, shit, I can sell 50 more copies if this guy's doing a tournament for me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then from there, what usually turns into trade is GameStop will just like give you a free game, or they'll give you a controller. So it's usually a favor for a favor type thing. There has been GameStops that have paid me to do it, same as Best Buy. And then there's sometimes I'm like, hey, just toss me a copy of the game, we're square, man, and I'll come up here and do some more stuff for you. So I'm a country boy. It's always, hey, I'll give my shirt off my back if you give me your shirt as well, type thing. And that's just how you do it. You don't demand stuff. You negotiate stuff. And that's how you get farther in life, is saying, hey, let me help you if you help me.
Yeah. And for our corporate audience out here, that's called an in-kind sponsorship. And something interesting that's been going on in esports recently is trying to differentiate the difference between corporate and business, because I'm trying to include in our little community everyone from the independent contractor to the person that works for Sony Studios or Blizzard Esports, wherever it is. Obviously the folks over there in the corporate are, it's harder to get in where you fit in when you're a little guy with those guys. And so
right
to hear stories like what you're saying is that, there is an opportunity out there. It just depends if you can speak and communicate well for yourself, present yourself right, and deliver on the goods. I guess the next thing is, like, let's say you're able to do business with a franchise, a local franchise or a mom and pop shop to do a tournament. How do you take it to the next level? How do you get to the next stage like you have with DreamHack and South by Southwest?
So basically what you do is you build up your portfolio, your resume. So, all right, well, I've did 30 grassroots events around, say, your state. From there, you can also then try to reach out to, like, say, a military branch, or you can try to reach out to, like, Extra Life, or, for instance, we just picked up Special Olympics to help them out. So you just reach out to these companies and you're like, hey, I think we can do this. Do you want to get on board and help out? And then, they'll either agree or they won't. And then from there, for instance, when I got on with DreamHack, is that I had reached out to them before, but they usually have their veteran squad, So I went up to Michigan for Gamers for Giving. It was just pretty much 48 hours of complete gaming. There was Halo there. And so I ran the Halo thing. Well, luckily enough, in the back of the production was a guy that works for DreamHack. And I wouldn't be on. So for an admin, I'm just supposed to sit there, babysit the guys and tell them what maps are playing, easy stuff. But I went beyond it. I helped set up stuff. I helped mic check. I helped run wires because I enjoy working with my hands. And from that, he reached out to me like a couple of weeks later. He's like, hey, you want to come work DreamHack Dallas, bro? I was like, I bet, And so after that, I got on it. And it's because I put my foot in the door and I showed initiative. You can't just think, well, I got this position, now I'm going to milk it. No, if you show extra, people are going to want you because they see how valuable you are,
Yeah, absolutely. You've done some more things in the charitable side. One of the things that you promote is the gamers outreach portion also. So what's the process of like working with, in charitable, doing the charity streams or charity tournaments?
So when it comes to things like that, like when I got with Gamers Outreach, is I reached out to them and said, hey, this is my background. What can I do? And usually it is volunteer. So for instance, I flew myself up there. I maybe spent $300 on a plane ticket, but they fed me. They gave me, food or hotel basically to sleep at, and I busted my butt. Well, from that, of course, it transitioned into more. And so you can't always, like we mentioned before, get paid right off the rip. But to get involved with that, you just show them, hey, I want to help you make money. So let's go do this tournament. Like whenever I do Extra Life, I did one with the OU Children's Hospital, which they're tied in. So we did something called Miracle Con to where, you know, it costs them maybe $20 to get in, but now we have sponsors like Paycom and we have sponsors like the military that come in. And so if you can help build your little pieces to get more foot traffic in, that giant, you know, pieces of puzzles will finally become the full picture. And so from that, it actually transitioned to where I worked with Oklahoma City Thunder, to where people that wanted to play in the tournament, it would cost them $22. They'd get a Thunder basketball game ticket that night. And then they can also win between $3,000 to $5,000 playing in the different tournaments we had. And so it's just that stepping the stairs. You start one step, you work, you step the next one, and eventually you'll get to the top. But you just got to keep stepping. You never want to go backwards.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I don't hear about value propositions like that very often. You know, while there's what's going on in Dallas with the Esports Arlington Arena, Esports Stadium Arlington, I'm sorry.
You're good, man.
That's like had a brain fart there. With them, you know, you don't hear that you're getting a tournament ticket to the Cowboys or you're getting a ticket to the Rangers or something like that, but. That's amazing. That sort of camaraderie between the different sorts of professional sports and esports is important, I think, in the growth of the overall culture and industry. So, what is it that a tournament? How do you differentiate yourself from other tournament organizers?
So,
Gaming.
You're good.
Actually,
you're
two good. Parts here. So, as a tournament admin, how do you differentiate yourself? Also, as an organization, Click Gaming, how do you differentiate yourself?
You're good. So I've noticed most people that are, AM grassroots people that do tournaments, it's community. That's where they fail at. So a lot of them will create an event on Battlefy or Smash.gg or Challenge where it literally runs itself. You know, they don't interact with the people. They don't give a damn with us. We make you join the Discord. From there, you're going to find teams. You're going to find friends. We're going to troll each other with memes and have fun. And then when we do tournament side, we go and we have a area. It's called match calling, and we'll put everybody who's up against each other by their Discord handle. From there, we have a general chat where they're going to chat about each other. They're going to figure out who they play. They're going to report scores to us manually, so they hear us interact and they see us talking. And then if there's a dispute, instead of letting Battlefy bots handle it, or get stuck in limbo, we figure out, all right, well, what happened? Send us some screenshots. Let us know what happened. So we want to make sure it is as fair as a professional scene can be on an AM level, because even when we're at the big boy stuff, if an issue arises, we handle it. All right, you disconnected. Well, sorry, you have to play without it. No, we are. Well, was it in a minute? Was it not? What happened with this? What happened with that? So we break down all the variables because we want to make sure no matter if it's a free to enter or a paid to enter tournament, you feel like you're the best person there and you're getting the VIP treatment compared to other places. Because like I said, it's by the gamer for the gamer. And that's how we do it, man.
What's been the most satisfying, the best experience that you've had being a tournament organizer?
So one of the most memorabilia ones was when I was down at, like I said, Arlington Esports Arena, like you mentioned, we did the first Madden event that had happened since the Jacksonville shooting that happened like back in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, so there was a guy that I remember, he was actually at an Austin event that I did. He travels for Madden. He remembered me, and at the time, his son was sick. And of course, by the time that happened, the time I met him again, his son has passed, but he had my number and we had texted back and forth. And he recognized me and he came up, gave me a big hug. He's like, dude, because of you, I kept gaming for my son because I was heartbroken and you helped me get out of that dark hole. So things like that means a lot to me. I'll have gamers come up to me, and they'll get drinks after, they'll have five. They'll tell me about their girlfriend. They'll tell me about their dog. If they're having issues, it becomes a family. And that's what we enjoy doing, is because it is a family at the end of the day and it's not a business paycheck.
Yeah. That's interesting. Recently, I'm going to blank here, but Esports Awards, one of the lifetime achievements that I saw yesterday was for a gentleman that's been doing it for tournament organizing for quite some time. I think it was, I'm not going to remember the guy's name, but yeah, that's one of the things. Here's the thing is about esports is there are a lot of people behind the scenes, but you know, and they've been doing it for a long time, but it's hard to get somebody that's been playing a game. You know, you've been able to diversify that, you know, somebody that's a someone who's starting to do tournaments or a player in Fortnite is not going to know who paved the way
right.
for any of this. And even myself, who sort of wants to be a historian of esports and definitely wants to give everybody their due praise, it's very difficult. And so one of those things that I think it is that a lot of people see the dollar amount, right? Going around, it's, you know, anywhere from a billion to $2 billion of the overall market, or a billion to 25 billion to some people, is the overall market value of esports. And it took a while to get to that place. And so there are a lot of people who are seeing it as an opportunity to get some cash, you know, have an opportunity, a career. You know, some people even see it as a get rich quick scheme,
right.
You know, and I'm sure they thought the same thing when the NFL started, or, you know, when baseball first made it in America or whatever, you know, a traditional sport, you name it. But esports does need a little bit more tender love and care.
I think than
the traditional sports. And so when I hear people wanting to get in it for money, I don't discourage them, but I want them to know that
there's a
lot of people want to get into how do I make money in tournaments? How do I get a sponsor? How do I get, you know, how do I get a venture capitalist to back my company, right? How do I get the funds to self-fund my company, you know?
Right.
These are all the topics of discussion, but I think the first the thing is, how do you even get to the point at which you can make that ask for that first, you know, that first payment? What's that like? What was that process like for you?
So for us to get, like I said, backers, sponsors, etc., they want to know, it's like applying for a job. What makes you, you know, caliber to be part of their team now or something like that? So for us, we're like, hey, this is what we can do on our streams. And we break down everything that we do and how we do it. From there, we break down how we engage with the community. We break down how many leads we get. So for them, if you have a sponsor that say, let's get this, they're going to give you $5,000 for a tournament, right? They're going to want their flyer on, you know, whatever social media you do. They're going to want it on the stream. They're going to want commercials. They're going to want people that actually engage and care about it, because you can give me $5,000 and I can treat you like crap. That's the last $5,000 I'm ever going to get from you too. You know, so you treat it like it's a job. You're going to bust your ass that entire time. And then at the end of the day, you're like, hey, you know, did you like it? Or, you know, is there something else we can maybe do for you guys to help, you know, push more out? And by that, they see that you're trying to get that, you know, extra initiative, because there'll be times where I'll be doing an events with like the Marines or OCU, and I'll be texting on my phone while I'm casting, but I'm talking to like the people that are paying my bills. I'm like, hey, is there something I can shout out for you guys? So you're showing more initiative and showing how badly you want to make this succeed and keep going. And from there, they bring you back on for more and more and more, because they see that you are a body and not a dollar figure to them, you know?
Yeah. So another thing that I was looking at right now for with you is the game gym. What's that, and what are they doing in esports?
So Game Gym is a company based out of Rockville, Maryland. Before COVID hit, it was a physical establishment to where kids can not only come and be like healthy, because they taught like workout classes, like small like gamer stuff, but it is also an area to teach you better skills in gaming, from hand-eye coordination to memorization to team bonding, team building. So it was like its own little gym, but for gaming. Well, because now that COVID hit, whenever I came onto them, it was supposed to be for a summer coach position where I would teach kids classes. All right, we're going to learn this about the maps. We're going to learn this about this. And well, it was between me and a lady who was local, but she actually had a teaching degree. And I was like, look, I was like, she is more, you know, higher up in the educational part of teaching these courses, at least laying them out. But I said, I would love to help out. They're like, wait, with your background, how about we get you on as a coach, but we also get you on as our esports tournament director. And so from that, now I host online tournaments for them. And we called something called a step up series, to where the winner of each one would get put into a championship at the end of the year. And then from there, we got HyperX involved. From there, we got GamerGoo involved. And then we also got like other companies involved to toss in money. And so now we are actually on our winter championship, which happens in 2 weeks. And I'll be in Maryland up there. I'll be running the brackets, and I'll also be casting the Overwatch tournament. But because of that small transition of, hey, let me help you build your community, they had been involved. They've been online for maybe 2 or 3 years now. But their Discord maybe had 300 or 400 people when I started. Now it is at 3359. And that was since April till now. So within 6-7 months, I built it from 300 people to over 3,000 people because of tournaments. And then from there, they're getting customers that are now signing up to join their online classes, signing up to be coaching. So it's those little baby steps, which you start a fire, and that fire will spread and keep going until it gets to where it needs to. And that's just what it is. Yeah. So it's just, like I said, trial and error and hustling.
Yeah. I seen a couple different companies. There are people in our community that are, doing gamers, health and wellness. And, I think that there's not enough of it from my perspective. I don't see it enough, in the schools or in the, little local LAN centers. And I would like to see a little bit more of it. But now, talking about, schools, I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but what's it like, working with collegiate and high schools and middle schools? What's that process like?
So it's actually pretty interesting, because each high school is going to, it depends on the game. Let's say for Smash, they're probably going to have 2 or 3 or maybe 4 players max that are, think of it like varsity versus junior varsity. They're going to have the same thing for that. So with it goes involved is that you get the high schools involved, you let them play each other. And then at the end of the day, you can have a championship for them. And then from there, you can get, like I said, sponsors involved, where they're going to give medals away, they're going to give money away. We have one called the Oklahoma Esports League. And last year around like November 15th or so, I got with Oklahoma City University, and we had East versus West. And so we had over 43 students in Oklahoma City, and then we had another like 38 or so up in Tulsa. And it consisted of about, I think, 20 or so high schools. And so it was great. And so they had 3 to 6 players of each, but they were all having fun, because it's about gaming, but it's also about bragging rights. And so with this movement, colleges are offering sponsorships. And so now you're going to do good at that. Well, now you can possibly win a class state ring, because let's say I won Smash Bros, but I was a champion. So now I got a ring from it. From there, let's say OU, OSU, whoever wants to pick you up, now you're going to be on their caliber team. And from there, now you can transition to the pros, because scouts might see you. So it's no different than playing sports. With the college, it's great, because now you can show off how great caliber you are. So whenever I did Arlington Battle for Texas, it was literally 16 Texas teams from, Texas A&M, Longhorns, et cetera. And there was actually a couple out-of-staters, like Mississippi State was in there. So by playing and enjoying what you want, it can bring something that would not have, for instance, let's say Kansas. We all know Kansas sucks in football, but let's say they have an awesome Rocket League team. Now they're actually getting people to go to their school because it's for esports now compared to football, and it just helps that grow.
Yeah. So what is it you talk? There's so many things you said, so much to learn from you, that you travel. What's the traveling like in esports? Because I don't think enough people realize even the amount of travel that players have to go through, because we haven't even talked about the international scene of esports yet.
Right.
But yeah, what's traveling like, and what's that process like for you?
Well, I mean, if it's a local event, if I can drive there and it saves whoever's hiring me money, that's fine. Does it suck sometimes? Yeah. But let's say here at grassroots, I'll drive to Tulsa, I'll drive to Oklahoma City. It might be 30 minutes, it might be 60 minutes, but it's nice and it's not bad. There's been times for when I did go to Dallas, they could have flown me out, but I was like, hey, it's my first time. Let me save you guys cash. It's 3 hours to drive. So I did it. They tossed me gas money. And then of course I got hotel room and pay on top of it. When I go to Arlington Esports, they pay me, But they're like, hey, you do have to get a hotel, which was fine. I just stayed at a friend's house, so I saved money that way. But when it comes to the big travel, normally, if it is a big company, they'll pay for your flight, they'll pay for your hotel, they'll pay for everything, and then they'll give you extra. You just have to send them an invoice later on. If it comes to a mom and pop, like when I did one in Fresno, California, it was for a 10K Smash event. And I had just randomly seen this guy posting it online, and I reached out to him, and he's like, hey, he's like, I can do it. He's like, but all I can really afford is a plane ticket and you share a hotel room with me. I was like, that's fine. And so I did it. I busted my ass. I helped run the tournament. And then 2 weeks later, I got a check in the mail for $500. Don't even ask a damn dime. It said, and it was from his wife saying, thank you for helping out so much. You were a blessing in disguise, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, all right, bet. So,
yeah,
you know, it's nice to have things like that, but at the same time, you don't expect it. So, but not everybody can be a dedicated 9-to-5 esports. People like, you know, other people have real jobs where they have to go out, and then esports is their passion. And so it's hard for those that have to earn a living outside of esports to be able to put as much time as I do in esports, because I am full-time esports, you know?
Yeah. So that leads to another question I was thinking about is like, how do you approach, you know, getting paid when you send an invoice? Do you, what's like 99% of the time? I don't know if this is even true, but what's the percentage of the time that you get paid ahead of time versus the pay that you get paid after the fact? How much do you, what are the checks and balances, and how do you put yourself in the right position so that you're not, you know, you're not losing a good amount of money? Screwed.
Screwed. It depends on the company. So like with DreamHack, I literally don't spend any money out of my pocket unless I want to. It's usually a net 30, which is like, you know, 30 days or less to get a paycheck, but you'll get the invoice in. Same with UGC when I do stuff for them. MLG was literally the same thing. So when it comes to local events, like let's say with UCO or OCU or whoever, they know an event's coming up, and I can either ask half now or half later. It just depends. If I'm hurting, or let's say if I have to travel, I'm going to make sure they give me the gas or whatever it takes to get there first. And then as long as I'm out of pocket, I'm not losing anything. And then it's like doing a normal job. You got to, you know, wait for your paycheck 2 weeks later and you'll get it. So
yeah,
it's not bad. But if you are working with a major company or a company that is making you spend your money off the rip, make sure you get a contract so you don't screw yourself. I haven't had that issue yet, but I've heard other horror stories of saying, oh yeah, I spent $500 round trip, flight, food, all that stuff, and then I never got a dime from it. And I was like, did you sign a contract? No. I was like, there's your first problem, bro. And you know,
yeah,
I hate to say it, but it's not all handshakes like it used to be back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is it like, I guess, I don't know, with Click Gaming, do you guys have the hardware as well? Do you bring the hardware?
Oh yeah. 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 We bring the hardware.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. So, and with that being the case, what sort of invoices are you sending ahead of time to be like, make sure that, you know, you have your deposit, you know, that everything's squared away, that you're not showing up to an empty room with no, you know, with essentially, you know, no in-house staff there to allow, say, hey, this is where the electrical box is, this is where you can patch into the, you know, the internet.
Right. When it comes to events like that, I usually try to scout out the area because I kind of want to build a blueprint in my mind, and I will jot stuff down on notes where this is at and this is at. And then before the event, I try to at least show up. If it's a local one, I try to show up the night before, set everything up. So whenever it's morning, everything's been tested and it's clean, because you don't want to set up that day and be like, there's no internet, or this electric support's not working, because then you're FLA, you know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to that, it's like I said, it's, you have to go out and do the work. You can't expect it all to come to you. That's one thing I love. Also, like you had mentioned earlier, not everybody understands how much goes behind the scenes. I've had gamers come to anything from small to big events. They're like, oh, this is pretty cool. They're like, I was like, do you know how it got built? They're like, no. I was like, you're looking at the guy that built it. Like, you did all this? Yeah. So, you know, grassroots could be 8 to maybe 24 consoles, monitors. When it's big boy stuff, it's 210 plus the tables and the chairs and everything. I was like, there's a reason why we get here days beforehand, because we build this all. And then it literally, what takes us 2.5 days to build, I can break down in 6 hours at the end of the show, you know? And a lot of people that don't know the background think it's just, oh, well, this company, you know, we're at DreamHack. DreamHack did it. No, DreamHack hired us to do it, so they don't have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, the average gamer knows how to plug in the console and, you know, hook up the HDMI
you
and
everything that. Like that.
But I do say that. And the reason why I say that is because it's different when you're hooking up 200 consoles. Like right. It's, you know, it's way different.
I've got some stories. Yeah. So there's one story. We were at UMG 2014 Call of Duty Ghost, right? I'm a player this time. So I'm at their player having fun. Well, we're waiting on this team to get there. And I'm sitting there bullshitting with the coach. And he's starting to plug in their mix amps. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, my players don't know how to hook up their mix amps. I'm like, their players, they spent $260. They don't know how to plug in their own mix amps. I was like, this team's about to get wrecked. And then they did. They were some scrub teams. But I'm just like, man, if you're going to go somewhere, you better know how to do the dance before you sign up the dance, man. It's not going to work. But yeah, from the other aspect, from actually building stuff. So one situation, I had a friend, I said, hey, go hook up this LAN cable to daisy chain to the next router. He plugs that same one into the same router and drops the internet. I was like, why didn't you do that? He's like, oh, I plugged it in the wrong one. I was like, you daisy chained it to the same router. So you literally just made the IP loop back in there and killed everything off. There was a time when I was at, I was like, man, it took 3 hours to get it back. But the other funny part was I was in Atlanta, Georgia for DreamHack Halo, and we had set everything up. You know, we taped down the Cat 5s, all that stuff. Well, I had the trash can and we're picking stuff up, and I was just dicking around. I was happy. I had my boots off, I had my socks on. So I'm, you know, flying across the concrete in my socks and I'm leaning on the trash can. Well, I guess I hit the tape down cord and I was like, my bad, my dumbass move. Come the next morning, half the stations weren't working. Well, come to find out, I hit the cord and I broke the cord. I was like, that explains it. So it was a quick fix, but we're like, what's going on? You know, why is half of it not working? Oh, my 220-pound ass snapped the cord. That's what happened.
Wow, those are the things that you got to deal with as a know, a networker, you know, tournament networking and whatnot. Oh man, that's wild. What do you think esports needs the most? What do you think the next big wave is?
Honestly, esports needs to give back to the community more because, don't get me wrong. Yes, the pro players do attract things. It's like a movie star. You're going to go see an epic movie like, say, you know, the Avengers because of who was all in it, the storyline. But there's so much great other talent that could be in it that's just getting brushed to the side. So when it comes to community, is, you know, pros, they'll get their little special treatments. They'll get this, they'll get that. When the AMs have to literally grind through the pit to even get a chance to get in there. So if they dedicated part of the tournament to where it was AM only, and then you had semi-pro and other pro in that area to where, all right, well, now we have the top eight of this versus the top eight of this. Let's push them together and let's see who can dance. Because there's a lot of teams that don't get that chance because, like I said, the pro teams are there and they get wiped out by the pros when maybe they're just cold. Maybe they didn't give a chance. And so by listening to the community, by listening to grassroots people saying, hey, you know, let's dedicate more towards who loves the game compared to, well, who's just here making a paycheck, you're going to get more people involved. Like back in the day when I said 256, it didn't matter if you're pro or AM. You earned your spot in that tournament by going to the tournament and competing in it. Compared to now, oh, well, I got first place last DreamHack. You know, I get four, you know, I'm going to be in the fourth place roster this one. I didn't have to compete online to get placement points. It's just because they have the title pro in their name.
And so, like, this is usually the last question before we head out of here. If you were to give yourself advice to your earlier self, what would you say?
Man, I there's been plenty of times where I'm like, is this really what I want to do? You know, I'd get down on myself. Especially as a player, you know, I'd go and I'd bust my ass and then I'd make a stupid play or a teammate just had a bad game. And I'm like, man, I said, I can't believe I wasted all my time in this. But then I look at everything I've done in the past. And I'm like, it's just to brush it off, you know? So never give up no matter how hard or easy something is, because life is always going to throw you curveballs. You never want to have a what if compared to, hey, at least I tried, you know?
Hell yeah. So, all right, guys, this has been Johnny Weaver and Click Gaming. And a lot of extensive experience in esports. So I don't think that gives them justice. But Johnny, this is your opportunity to just like shout yourself out. How can people get in contact with you?
If you want to check out the website, it's just clickgaming.gg. You can actually reach me on any kind of social media. Facebook is Johnny Ryan Weaver. And then anything from Instagram, Twitter, literally just type in IC Chiller and I'll pop up somewhere.
Awesome. Any upcoming tournaments, any way that someone could get involved, you know, sponsors, anyone, you know, how could they get involved in upcoming tournaments?
Well, yeah, if there's anything from a sponsor that wants to get involved, let's say, hey, you know, we have $200. Can you run a commercial for us? Yeah, toss us a commercial. We'll put your pot towards the prize that we already have. And then we'll do it from that. If it's a bigger company, yeah, we're going to invoice you money because we're putting all that extra time into it. But we're also not going to, you know, charge you DreamHack level 50. You know, you're going to pay me $50,000. Compared to something small where I'm like, hey, just toss me $1,000, we'll squash it, we'll cover you good. If there's a player or someone that wants to learn how to get better at a game or someone that wants to learn how to admin, be a caster, just reach out to us. We're always looking for internships to help people grow into the next level. It's all about giving back. It's family, like we mentioned before, man.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. I'd love to have you back on the show later to talk about more of the of how things are going in around the world and the tournament organization. Big thing is coming, obviously, with how DreamHack is now ESL Gaming and a lot of the new conversions and whatnot. So I'll definitely, you know, you're one of those boots on the ground people that I can get in contact with and learn a bit more about the information. I cannot say enough highly enough to reach out to Johnny about any questions that you have. Again, thank you guys for listening. This has been the Esports Business Network podcast. Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our Bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the Bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.